This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
David Swanson joins me live in studio. His most recent book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. He joins us on occasion to talk local and national issues, and the phone number is 977-1070. If you are so moved to join this conversation at any time, we'd love to hear from you and always invite our listeners to participate in the conversation we're having. David, how are you? It's good to see you.
It's good to see you. It's great to be here.
I'd like to sort of pick up where I just was a few minutes ago with an issue that I'd like to hear your insight on. And I was talking with Dee Dee Smith about this local water debate. And I find the more interesting than the nuts and the bolts of this plan and that plan, I personally find the politics of the debate really fascinating, because we are really seeing an explosion of stereotypes, you know, progressives and liberals in the city coming up with what is arguably the small government fiscally responsible plan, and yet the chamber and conservatives in the county arguing for what is really, as in my opinion, and I've been watching this for years, is the big government public works project, the more expensive plan. And what I find interesting is that you have the proponents of the bigger, more expensive plan. I really think it's an example of what, on a grand scale, it's sort of a small local example of what we refer to nationally as corporate socialism, the use of government to get the public to subsidize the investment and the risk, to socialize the investment and the risk, to subsidize business and to privatize profit. Can you talk about this idea? Because it's an element of our economy, it's an element of our politics that goes beyond stereotypes that I find really, truly fascinating.
I think Franklin Roosevelt himself referred to it as fascism before that took on other brutal racist connotations. But it's, you know, actions speak louder than words. And we've heard words for decades in this country about how the right is for less taxing and less spending and smaller government. But we've seen the exact opposite. When the right is in power, at least on the national level, we get bigger government, more spending, more debt, if not more taxing. And a lot of that is sort of hidden in the fact that we aren't getting anything, and the poor people that we don't want to give anything to aren't getting anything for all the spending. The spending is all going into the military, which doesn't count, into energy development that can't survive in the private marketplace, into oil and coal and nuclear. I mean, look at this nuclear plant that they want to add over at Lake Anna, where we're already paying for the development, for the research, for their lawyers when we sue them. We're funding an energy source that can't survive in the private marketplace, that no private insurance company will dare to insure. We have to be on the hook for it, the way we're on the hook for Wall Street or for automakers. When these giant corporations fail, we have to bail them out. And you know, somehow we don't think of this kind of spending as big government spending. You know, where they want to cut back, where they don't want to see government spending, is in anything that benefits anybody directly. We want to get rid of that. We want to get rid of healthcare and Social Security and education and childcare and benefits that people in other countries consider routine and fundamental rights that we don't have at all.
It's so interesting that kind of spending is seen as liberal socialism, and yet when you literally give money to businesses that have more lobbyists than the middle class, it's not seen as socialism. When it's worse. You know, you're taking money from the middle class and in tax breaks and giveaways and just a long list of ways that money can be funneled into corporate interests, or as bald as just the recent giveaways to Wall Street. They ran their companies into the ground, and yet we have to bail them out so that they can make their billions of dollars in bonuses for destroying their companies.
And then the fact that we're that much further in debt becomes another justification for cutting back Social Security. You know, it's all a game. It's a cycle. The more money we give away to campaign contributors and business interests, and the more we cut taxes back, and the more we go into debt and have bigger deficits, well, the more responsible it will be to cut back on spending. You know, this bill that just failed, you know, had a majority of the senators, but failed because of the filibuster, to cut back on giving tax benefits to businesses who ship jobs overseas and giving instead tax benefits to businesses who hire Americans instead of having jobs overseas. Well, this failed because it would have cost money, would have actually cost a little bit of money. You know, the general thinking, while two very, very expensive and very, very unpopular wars are ongoing, the general thinking is that there's just no money and you can't spend money on anything that might benefit anyone. Wars is a different question.
And yet we're dumping money in Iraq and Afghanistan for social work projects that if we tried to spend that money on the exact same things here, the conservatives and Republicans would go nuts.
86% of Americans tell CNN our government is broken. Nobody thinks we have a functioning democracy in our country. Nobody in our country thinks that. And yet here we are spending money to try to impose so-called democracies on other countries, which shows how perverse our understanding of democracy is to begin with. And we've never done it before. You know, since Germany and Japan, which, by the way, were reduced to rubble and we still haven't left, since those examples, we haven't succeeded. All our nation building has not yet built a nation anywhere. And yet we're dumping trillions. They're going to have a hearing tomorrow in the Veterans Affairs Committee in the House with Linda Belmus and Joseph Stiglitz, who are going to say we are at $4, $5, $6 trillion in what we're going to be spending on Iraq and Afghanistan with nothing to show for it.
And yet companies are getting completely rich off of the public dime because we funnel money into this into these military-related companies, right?
Not just the war profiteering, which used to be scandalous and is now routine, but we've privatized the whole operation. We have more private contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan than U.S. servicemen and women, as we call them, whether or not they're doing a service. And that's waste. That's profit. It costs more. You get less. It's less accountable to Congress or the public. And that's the route we're going, so that this is becoming a business. And when you're funding business, that's not socialism.
Yeah. It's not. They don't call it socialism.
No. To be socialistic, it has to do somebody some good and therefore be evil and misguided, right? And this is the difference.
But when you take money from ratepayers or taxpayers and the public and give it to business, it's not socialism. It's somehow a good thing.
Right. The direct sort of individual way you do this is to look at what, you know, a congressman like Ken Calvert, a Republican from California, 44th District, is doing, where repeatedly he's a real estate guy. He'll buy up real estate in his district, and then he'll take millions and millions of dollars of taxpayer money in an earmark and write into a bill a big highway right past his property or a transportation hub right next to his property, and then he'll sell all of that land and businesses for incredible profit, all with the approval of the House Ethics Committee. And yet, on a grander scale, you know, this is how the whole Congress operates in our national policy.
The Bridge to Nowhere was specifically a gift for a friend that would make it possible to develop that island, right?
Indeed. And that's typical. And of course, you know, and sometimes you'll get these things reported by media outlets like Fox News because they're against all spending. They don't want the roads or the transportation hubs or anything else funded. And so they're happy to point out.
Well, unless it's in Afghanistan or Iraq.
Well, then, yes, of course, then it's okay. But it doesn't actually get built. Somebody makes even more money by not actually building it. And this is the big difference between us and, for example, European countries. And we love to complain, oh, they pay more taxes. And we, of course, hate taxes because we don't get anything for our taxes. But we pay more state, local taxes, more fees, more penalties. We pay pretty darn close to what they pay in taxes. They just pay the one chunk of taxes. But what do they get for it? They get free quality education, preschool through college. College is, if not free, cheap in Europe. They get vacations. They get retirement.
Well, I was going to ask you that. Let me ask you this. We're talking with David Swanson. His latest book is Daybreak, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. I was going to ask you this question. How is it that these other countries are beating us at our own game? We're supposed to be the big, strong economy, freedom. You have arguably countries elsewhere in the world that have stronger democracies with a lot more voting, a lot more accountability, It's much easier to get people out of office and get good people in. You've got much more choices in the political spectrum. You've got people working less hours for more money with more vacation time. How is it? What happened that these other countries in the world, and there's a list of them, are beating us at our own game?
I think we sort of put a focus in this country on personal freedoms, on the ability to choose between 18 kinds of toothpaste and the ability to speak freely and express our views as you and I are doing. We have these sort of personal freedoms, and we have the right to vote, at least theoretically. And yet power, you know, how Cicero defined freedom, you know, participation in power, we've just given that up. We don't have that anymore, and we don't fight for it. And so government runs along in 99% of the time paying no attention to what majority opinion is in this country and doing its own thing at the behest of business interests. We have more money than any other country, but we're piling more and more of it up into fewer and fewer hands. You know, 400 people have $1.4 trillion now, more than ever before in this country, while foreclosures are at a record. People are losing their homes and their savings in this country, and we don't have security. We don't have the security that people have in other countries because we don't have public support. We just have that individual freedom to make it or not. And fewer and fewer people are able to make it. And for the past 30 years...
Well, especially if the whole system is stacked against you making it.
It's stacked against us and moving more and more to being stacked more and more against us.
Yeah. Are we creating... It would seem to be... And we're going to go to the phones in just a second here. Steve, hang with us. 977-1070. Got a line open for listeners to join this conversation. It would seem to me that we are creating a country that is much worse than the one we revolted against in the 18th century.
Well, that's a tough comparison to make. I mean, we do have some liberties and rights and a different sort of societal situation for people who aren't rich and white and male and educated. I mean, it's a very, very different world. We have a longer lifespan than they did then, although our lifespan in the United States is shrinking.
I'm just talking about the reasons, the supposed reasons for that revolt, when they were fighting this collusion between a government that was only interested in benefiting very small wealthy class and business interests and had given up essentially being interested in the welfare of the vast majority of people, this supposed middle and lower classes. I mean, it was a revolt against that idea that your government and your supposed leaders, they don't care about you anymore. And they're just going to use you and use you up. And as long as you just go to work and shut up, you'll be okay.
Yeah. In fact, the Tea Party in Boston was a revolt against corporate power, not a pseudo movement funded by corporate power. But if you take the Declaration of Independence and all the complaints against King George, you don't have to change very many words to put George W. Bush or Barack Hussein Obama in there. The abuses are incredible. I mean, today the president announces sanctions against leaders in Iran. Something that I don't think the president of Iran could get away with. You know, in his country, there are other branches of government, not to mention the supreme ruler. Here in this country, we've given all power to one person, and every 4 years we change who likes that one person and who doesn't. But it's incredibly, incredibly dangerous. Yeah. And Barack Obama now has vastly more power than George W. Bush had or even dreamed of having.
We're talking with David Swanson, and the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Let me ask you to put on the headphones, and we'll go to Steve, who's with us. Steve, you're on Charlotte Hill right now. Go right ahead.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Going back to what you started on with, the paradox between the conservative side of local government wanting to spend more money and the traditionally more liberal side wanting to go the smaller route is interesting to me as well. I'd definitely lean to the right on most things. As far as some of the corporate bailout stuff, I mean, both parties, as you said, have been really guilty of this. I mean, the Democrats have controlled the House and the Senate since, 07? And both, went right along with Bush. And, they're all in this, which I think is some of the things that we've all been warned against about trusting big government and its collusion with parties. And I think both sides are disingenuous to say the other is the one that's guilty.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
That's a red herring to, you know, keep us from seeing. But they're both doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve, it's an excellent point. And David, we got about just 10 seconds left here before we break. But Steve makes a good point that I think you and I would both agree with. Both parties, right and left, I don't care. This is you're responsible. They're all complicit in this.
Couldn't agree more. And progressives agree and libertarians agree. But people on the right are being organized by this Tea Movement, Tea Party thing in a very different corporate guided direction that's not helping that problem.
A quick break. We'll continue this conversation. And
David
Swanson is live in studio. His most recent book is Daybreak, Undoing the Imperial Presidency. David, I thought it was interesting. Let me ask you about this. We were talking earlier about the idea of freedom and how in this country we've almost, I think, corporate interests have really polluted this notion of freedom to make it really just the ability to move around a little bit, which nobody really can afford anyway, or the choosing between 50 different brands of cereal or toothpaste. That has become freedom, participating in the marketplace, voting with your dollar, all of this stuff that was never freedom when this country was created. Freedom was all about the degree to which you participate in the decisions that control your life and the lives of your children.
Yeah. I mean, we have freedom of speech to a good extent, but freedom of the press, forget. I mean, a good local radio show like this one is an extreme rarity. We've lost most of our local and even national media outlets. We have a small cartel controlling our communication system. That's not freedom of the press. Freedom of elections? I mean, unless you are incredibly wealthy or willing to please those who are and obey their wishes, forget running for public office and forget, you know, influencing your representatives in public office. It just doesn't exist anymore.
Let me ask you about, we were also talking earlier about the spending power of the middle class and how folks in some other countries arguably have a greater quality of life. They work less hours for more pay. They have a lot more vacation time. You know, I'm thinking of the Scandinavian countries, Japan, England, France, Holland, Italy, Brazil, Portugal, places where people don't work as hard and they have more spending money. And anyway, Robert Reich, former Secretary of Labor under Clinton, has a new book out called Aftershock, in which he makes the case that the stockpiling of wealth among a very limited few was a problem in the late 1920s that contributed to the Great Depression. And his argument is that we've seen the same thing in the last few years contributing to this Great Recession, and that the end result is a decimation of the middle class. You have a middle class that can no longer afford the goods and services that the economy is producing. And their coping mechanisms that they've come up with that we've seen since the 1970s, you know, put more of your family members in the labor force, work longer hours, borrow. These coping mechanisms don't work anymore. Everybody's working who can find a job. We have, you know, we can't work any more hours, and you know, we certainly can't borrow anymore. That's over. That party's over, and so the economy collapses because you've decimated the majority of people that you rely on to buy the goods and services you're producing.
And Robert Reich has also revealed that President Clinton, early in his presidency, made a deal with the chairman of the Fed, Alan Greenspan. You keep the rates low, keep the economy looking good, the jobs looking good for a while here, and I'll give you some financial industry reform. I'll do away with the legislation that's protected Wall Street from itself for 60 years, and we'll let all kinds of banks merge together and create the disaster that we now have. So this has been a trend that's been facilitated by government after government for 20, 30 years now, including the one that Robert Reich served in. And it results in a situation where we have a wonderful country, a very wealthy country, but that is outpacing many other countries in poverty, in infant mortality, in shortening life expectancy, in limitations on education, vacation time, retirement, all the rest of it that you named. And you know, when we look at other countries in Europe, for example, there's a great new book by Stephen Hill called Europe's Promise that goes through all of this. You look at these countries and you say, my God, there's a different way to do it. It's almost offensive to Americans. You know, when I lived in Europe, I noticed that the political discourse was almost obsessed with what do other countries think of us. You know, I lived in Italy, and Italians just wanted to know, what does the rest of the world think of Italy? Oh, this is so embarrassing, this latest thing for Italy in the eyes of Americans and the rest of the world. Americans couldn't possibly care less. And if we discover that the rest of the world's found a better way with healthcare or anything else, you know, then we really don't want to use that solution. It's almost offensive to us.
Well, we demonize it. And to hear you talk, I mean, I'll guarantee you there's people listening, oh, you're some crazy liberal who likes European socialism, so therefore you must hate America.
Well, it's not that Europe can't learn things from us, you know. I mean, even on race, where we still have horrible, horrible problems, you know, racism is in some ways newer and expanding and in dangerous ways in Europe. And Europe is following our lead in some ways that it shouldn't be, where we should be following its lead. But, you know, to try to improve your country, to somehow equate that with hating your country, is just bizarre to me. It makes no sense whatsoever.
We're talking with David Swanson. His most recent book is Daybreak. Let me ask you about the upcoming elections now, just a few weeks away, whether, you know, 5th District congressional race or some of the larger issues that you're following that you feel bear on this election.
Well, you know, I'm one of those lacking the enthusiasm that the president thinks I should have. You know, you saw him out in Madison, Wisconsin yesterday saying,
trying to get people excited.
Now, every time I propose one of these new policies, even if I got it from the Republicans, even if it's a Republican idea, the Republicans still say no to it. You say, Mr. President, the reason we're not excited is because they are Republican ideas. I know the Republicans are saying no to it just out of spite. But why are you proposing it in the first place? I mean, if they're going to say no, at least push something worthwhile in the first place. So I certainly lack the enthusiasm, and I don't think the solution is for me to get all pepped up. I think the solution is for the government to pay attention and do something we want, and then we would get enthusiastic about it. And, you know, I look at freshman Democrats who unseated Republican incumbents, and I look at people like Alan Grayson down in Orlando, Florida, who became a leader of the progressives, outpaces the progressives, goes out and tells and publicly lobbies, gets the public to lobby his colleagues against funding these wars and all the rest of these disastrous policies. And now he's a wealthy guy. He doesn't need the money, but the money's pouring in, the volunteers, the enthusiasm, the free media coverage over his outspokenness. And then you look at somebody like Tom Perriello, you know, who, I mean, I asked Virgil Goode to stop funding the wars, and he didn't listen. I asked Tom Perriello to stop funding the wars, and he didn't listen. And, you know, I understand the argument that you know, a Congressman Hurt could be even worse and could add numbers to the Republican side, you know. But, you know, the Democrats have a pretty big majority. And losing some of the worst Democrats, which sadly, in terms of action, you know, setting aside where his heart and soul may be in terms of action, you know, Congressman Perriello has been ranked by Progressive Punch as something like the 283rd most progressive member of Congress. I mean, he's just awful in terms of what he actually does in Congress. You know, he displeases everybody on the right, of course, but he does nothing to please anyone who's progressive and at all independent, who at all willing to question whether they should just obey the Democratic Party.
We're talking with David Swanson. Let's go to the phones. Martha is with us. Martha, thank you so much for the call. You're on Charlottesville right now. Go right ahead.
Hi, I am listening, and I had to call in because I found it unbelievably offensive to talk about learning about, you know, better improvement of racism from the Europeans. I lived in Germany for 3 years, and there are no Muslims, Buddhists, African Germans, or Turkish people in seats of government or in military hierarchy or anywhere else. I mean, for 250 years, the United States has been practicing improve ever ability to integrate multicultural people, and this is just something that Europe is way behind the United States on.
Martha, I apologize for interrupting you, but if I'm not mistaken, I think that's the point that you were making, David, right?
Yeah,
that Europe does have increasingly problems worse than we do regarding racism.
I agree 100%. I meant to make exactly that point, and I'm sorry it wasn't clear.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Ben. I'm glad we clarified.
Thank you for clarifying it, Martha. Absolutely. So I heard recently Rush Limbaugh say that the choice, the choice Americans have in November is between liberals and Democrats and America. That this is as he frames it, you either vote with liberals and Democrats or you vote for America. And this is the continued sentiment we're hearing often from radio and television, conservative radio and television. It just seems like the vitriol and the anger from both sides, it's just increasing and increasing and heating up to the point where if you disagree with us politically, you're not an American. You must somehow be an outsider, an other, and you must hate America, and therefore you're not much better than a terrorist.
Right. You're with us or you're against us. You're on our side or you're a terrorist. I think it's a very dangerous pattern. I think it's incredibly damaging. And yet you hear these arguments now with from supporters of, you know, these recent government raids into the homes of peace activists and so forth, that, you know, if you're against our war against terrorism, then you must be on the side of the terrorists, and therefore peace activism is just about the same as terrorism.
Now, folks may not have heard of this. Explain this. The FBI raided the homes of peace activists in Minneapolis and Chicago, I believe, alleging that they were terrorists.
And a number of other cities. Well, they haven't alleged anything, haven't charged them with anything, have grand jury proceedings scheduled, but raided people's homes in several cities at 7 in the morning. People who are peace activists, who work with aid groups, who work for peace and for assistance to refugees and all sorts of things.
And I got to tell you, if you look at YouTube, you look online and Google this and look at the video of some of these people, frankly, they're like the last people in... They're the last people to be blowing up any buildings or anything. I mean, these are
The gentlest,
some crunchy liberals,
pacifists you've ever seen. I mean, go to my website, warisacrime.org, and look at read them what they have to say and look at the videos. I mean, Colleen Rowley, who was not too many years back paired with two other women as the Women of the Year on cover of Time magazine, who worked there in Minneapolis for the FBI and you know, blew the whistle on how much they had known about the 9/11 terrorists prior to 9/11 and hadn't acted on. You know, she's one of these peace activists in Minneapolis and is very outspoken and very well informed. The Inspector General of the FBI had put out a report just a few days before all these raids on similar violations by the FBI and denouncing them, and they go right ahead. And it appears a lot of it to be punishment of people who protested the Republican National Convention there in Minneapolis a couple of years back. But there is this idea now that is written into law and approved by our highest courts that material support for terrorists is terrorism. And so if you share a cup of water with someone in a meeting who's from an aid organization that somehow becomes affiliated with a terrorist group, now you're a terrorist. That the Washington Post prints an op-ed from someone in Hamas at the Washington Post is now a terrorist. You know, it's outrageous, but it's a serious trend that we have to look at.
David Swanson, he's online at davidswanson.org, and his latest book is Daybreak: Undoing the Imperial Presidency. David, thank you for being here. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.